This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 25th of June, 2010, and today I'm joined on the line once again by Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster for our monthly conversation on matters political, economic, social, and financial. Bob Chapman, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me again today.
Well, thank you very much. I love your program.
Well, I love having you on the program, and I'm very excited to talk to you this week as so many things are shaping up, and there's almost too many things to cover. So why don't we start just with something that's making headlines this week? Obviously, the G20 is taking place this weekend in Canada, in Ontario, in Toronto, and there's going to be a $1 billion price tag for the Canadian citizens to go along with that. But of course, there will also be political puppets of all stripes flying in to make their pronouncements that have already been handed to them from on high at Bilderberg. So what do you foresee coming out of this conference, if anything at all?
Well, I saw the Toronto news this morning, and I saw the RCMP with their red uniforms on, and I guess they call them the Mounties, saluting a man and a woman of color from some country. But anyway, it's very expensive, and the Canadians are generally pretty upset about it. They don't like playing for it, and I can't blame them. All Canadians will have to chip in a little bit. But what they're going to do is they're going to argue. The first thing that's going to come up probably is the fiasco that was the Bilderberger meeting, and how it was infiltrated and how it got so much publicity. And then they'll probably move to the argument between Europe and the United States. And now, interestingly, Britain has joined the Europeans in implementing austerity. And the United States doesn't want that. And if you saw yesterday in the U.S., the Senate refused to approve the unemployment extensions. I think there was $73.5 billion, if I'm not mistaken. And the House had passed that. And so the American economy cannot function without stimulus. And Congress, obviously, is not, or at least the Senate, between now and the next election in November, they are not going to pass a stimulus package. And so, behind closed doors, the Fed has been talking about, if you can believe this, an injection of $5 trillion, part of which is for the European banks. And so, get ready for the Fed Reserve to make out of thin air and immediately monetize probably about $1.5 trillion to be fed into the American economy one way or another, in order to keep it going sideways, maybe slightly to the growth side. And I don't think that that's going to occur until probably after the November election, because if they're going to expand that much money, and maybe even more, maybe $1 trillion more, then they want it to affect the coming election after that, which is 2 years. The last package lasted for about, and the package was a combination of $800 billion in stimulus and the rest, which was about $1.3 trillion from the Fed. That carried the economy for about 15 months. So they'll be fairly close to the following election as the effect of this $1.3 to $2.3 trillion affects the economy. And so that's the way I think it's going to roll out. They should really do it now if they're going to do it, but they can't because the Senate is not going to approve it, or at least not in its current form. And so I think that's going to be the main thing that they're going to talk about there. They're going to say, the Europeans are going to say, no, we've got to have austerity. And the Americans are saying, no, we've got to do our same Keynesian plan. Now, the Europeans have the right idea, but they're doing it wrong. They need to cut all government expenses 30%. I don't care how they do it, just do it. But they've got to cut taxes, and they're raising taxes. which is going to throw them into a deflationary depression. It's dumb, but they're doing it. In the United States, they just want to spend money until the cows come home, and that's not going to do anything either. And I think probably the Europeans will come around, and I think that the bill to keep the pigs, which are the weak nations in Europe, as they're called, solvent will be about $2 trillion. And that means the creation of $2 trillion in debt by Germany, France, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Austria for the most part. They're the more solvent ones, and even Austria is a little wobbly. And so I don't think that's a bill they can pay. And I think the best thing that could happen to all parties involved would be for Greece to default, leave the euro, go into the drachma, and clean up their act, cut everything by 30%, go after the rich people who aren't paying their taxes, and that's really who is not paying their taxes. And it's the same in Italy, incidentally. And cut the government, and that'll solve their problem. It'll take them 2, 3, 4 years to come out of it, but that's okay. If they go for the program, which has been approved, so to speak, they'll be paying that debt off, and they will be in a quasi-depression for 20 to 30 years. It's not worth it. And besides, the bankers who created the money out of thin air, who lent it to them, should have never lent it to them in the first place because they knew of their dire financial condition 30 years ago, never mind the last 10 years. And so I think that that's going to be the biggest issue at the meeting there. And it's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight.
So basically it's a fight between the deflationary depressionists of the austerity school and the inflationary depressionists of the Keynesian school.
Yes.
I don't know. That seems like, to me, it seems like a choice about between getting shot in the head with 357 Magnum or getting your head chopped off with a katana. Either way, I don't think I want that.
No, but we don't have much choice.
I suppose
not.
Well,
you might call us voices in the wilderness, which are not very appealing to the people who are in power.
That's one way of putting it, yes. What you say Greece should be doing is, of course, obviously what they should be doing if they were genuinely interested in getting out of this predicament. But again, we know that this predicament has been created with forethought and with malice of intention in order to draw Europe into this web of increasing austerity, to bring the ties even closer together as the regional government starts to consolidate into international financial institutions that only gain with each and every step towards disaster. So we know, just like the housing market in the U.S. was set up to fail, and we know that this is set up to fail. It's almost pretty predictable at this point. But picking up on something else that you mentioned was that you say that the Fed is shaping up to perhaps inject $1.5 trillion into the U.S. Economy. And we've been talking about this for some time now, but basically your predictions about when this will ultimately fail always depend on whether they keep the stimulus coming. And so you're saying it looks at this point like it's going to keep coming?
Right. I think the game is on. And that is really inside information. That's not public information. But that's the way this thing is bending. And I'm trying to guess at the timing, and I think it'll begin after the election is over, probably early next year. So that means that between now and early next year, the stock market's going to get battered pretty badly. This would be official figures, not real figures. For the second quarter, the GDP in the U.S. should be about a plus 1 to 2%, 1.5%, somewhere in there. The third quarter, it should be even. And the fourth quarter should be minus 2%. And then the Fed will say, well, gee, we got to do something. We got to save everybody, particularly the money lenders. And they'll come on with this giant amount of money that they're going to spend. You know, they'll be buying treasuries secretly, of course. They'll be buying toxic waste, which are the collateralized debt obligations, and they will be making available TARP-type funds, and they'll force the banks to start lending to small companies and medium-sized companies, and then they'll start creating jobs, which will be next year, probably about June that'll start. And so they'll have a year and a half going into the following election where the economy again will go sideways, but inflation's going to go crazy. They're going to be back at 14% easy. These are real numbers, not official. Official numbers would be about 6%. And so that's where this thing is headed.
Well, there's another gigantic monkey wrench in the works that I can see from my layman's perspective, and that looks like a decoupling of the Chinese currency that's taking place as we continue to see the yuan rising in value against the dollar ahead of this G20. What is your take on this, and what's really happening here?
The Chinese are very crafty people, and they're very good at foreign relations, we'll call it. And you watch what the Chinese do, not what they say. And that goes for every politician or every government throughout the world. They've said before that they were going to revalue their currency. It's never happened. Oh, a little bit here and there, but nothing important. You know, they have a plunging stock market. It's down 25% since last October, which we predicted, incidentally. They have a bubble in real estate that's going to burst, and it's going to be very, very expensive for everybody. They have 30 million people unemployed. It's not a very good situation. I don't see them raising the value of the yuan very much at all, if at all. Let's wait until they do it. The celebrations shouldn't come until after the fact. And so I'm very skeptical as to what the Chinese are going to do.
As am I, because it certainly couldn't be in their interests to actually appreciate their currency very much. Talk a little bit about that and where China stands in relation to this ongoing collapse of the American-European economies.
Well, just take an example. If they revalue their currency, the T-shirt that they're selling in America at a dollar might go to $1.10. But all the competitors, they're not going to revalue. They're going to continue to sell T-shirts to America for a dollar. That puts them right out on the market. You got to be kidding me. You know, the basis to this thing that's supposedly called free trade, globalization, offshoring and outsourcing, the very basis that makes it work is competitive devaluation. That's why America needs tariffs on goods and services. It's the only way we can compete. They've already cost, the transnational conglomerates that manufacture and use service facilities outside the United States, they've already cost us 8 million jobs in the last 11 years. 8 million. I mean, you wonder why there's unemployment in America. And the main cause of that is that American products can't compete. And the reason why is our wages are relatively static. But to gain advantage, every other country in the world lowers the value of their currency. Take as an example right now the euro. It came down from 150 to 119. It's about 123. That means German goods are the best exporters in the world, believe me, better than China. Their products are going to be 15, 12, 17% cheaper. Now you tell me what other nation is going to be able to compete with them. They're not. So everybody says, well, Europe's got problems, the Eurozone's got problems. The value of the currency's down, and it's probably good because they deserve it because the currency isn't what they say it is. That's probably true. But it doesn't change the fact that American exports and the American balance of payments deficit is going to go up into the stratosphere. And we're going to be back where we were 4 or 5 years ago. You know, for every action, there's a reaction. It's just like in Europe. All the bad debt held by the banks and the governments that bought the bonds from the five pigs. No one ever talks about the people who bought the paper, the Germans, the French, and so on, because they'll probably never get paid. And so you have two losses here. The money that was lent is all gone, and the lender is stuck with nothing. And take Germany as an example. How much do they all own in bonds in those five countries? I don't know, maybe a trillion? It's a lot. In all of those countries, their citizens are going to have to come up with the money to make up for the losses in the bonds because of the profligate ways of five other countries. And that's what the German public and now the French public are really upset about.
Right. So in the case of somewhere like Greece, where they were cooking the books and lying to their own citizens anyway about what kind of economic situation they were in, it's not like the citizens were benefiting from the funds that the Greek government was really using to their advantage. And then, of course, the Germans and others who were actually lending them the money are also getting the shaft. So it seems that all around, that just absolutely every possible way, the people are losing and the banks are winning. But what else is new?
Yeah, well, that's a good comparison because you got to look at both sides of everything, and most people don't do that. You know, it's just like in the markets today, people say, "Gee, the economy's might not be so hot in a number of countries, but the stock markets are up." They don't stop for a minute to think that the United States government is propping markets up. They get away with it. It's legal. Executive order. The working group on financial markets. They distorted the whole thing. If the United States government was not in the market, in the U.S. market, right now would probably be selling around 5,000 to 6,000 on the Dow. And it's going to happen. Because when the market sees what kind of earnings the major corporations are going to have in the second half of the year, and they are the ones who've done the best, because they can get money anytime they want it. When they see the decrease in earnings, the market's going to go down. And they're going to see the economy sliding, and they're going to see unemployment rising. By the end of the summer, I expect real unemployment to be up from 22.25% to 23.75%. And that's quite a jump in 3 months. But I believe that's going to happen. And if they don't come up with this stimulus until after the first of next year, in the last quarter of the year, in all probability, we'll pop to 25%. U6 would probably be something in the vicinity of 20%.
Absolutely horrifying. But I certainly do see something like that in the cards if things continue to unfold as they are. But here's a question that I've had for some time now, and that's that we know that the Anglo-American interests very strongly control what's happening in the New World Order globalist circuit these days, and the power still very much resides at Wall Street and the City of London. But how does the BRIC countries fit into this system? Do they present a real and valid challenge to the system, or are they just being used as pawns to be discarded at the appropriate time? Do they actually present a threat to the existing power structure?
Well, you know, it's hard to say specifically with China. Mayor Seitung, like Ho Chi Minh, were both put into power by the United States government. And the ascendancy of the Soviet Union was financed from New York, Paris, and London. And many of the things that you've seen over the last century have been the creatures of these powers behind government. And so you say to yourself, is China still under their control, so to speak? I don't know that. I only can go so much far with my thinking, because I got to back into everything. I don't have any connections in the Illuminati that are telling me that this is going to happen and that's going to happen. I have operatives throughout the world. They come up with great information, some of it from those places, but we don't get much of it. Most of it is historical training and intuition. So, to answer your question with China, I don't know. Russia, I think, is trying to run an independent course, as is India. And I think Brazil is as well. But I can't believe Brazil, which is booming, is paying 8 to 10% to borrow money. There's something wrong there. So I don't see them as being stable. And I see Venezuela as being bankrupt. Their leadership is awful. And they got the same problem now in Uruguay, Ecuador, and Bolivia. They all have communist governments. And if you gave them an instruction manual, they couldn't run anything right. That's how bad it is. So I think of all of the BRIC nations, I think Russia presents the biggest threat to the Illuminati. I don't think they can control them. And the Russians want to do their own thing, and I don't blame them. It's a great country, a great intelligent people. I know, I used to spy on them, so I know they're not stupid. And so I get a great deal of respect. So if anybody is not controlled and is out of line, it'll be Russia first. But China may follow. We don't know where they stand today. And, of course, they like the growth that they've had over the past 15 years, which was allowed by their masters who allowed them into WTO, etc. But then again, they're surprises. I would have never thought 2 weeks ago that Great Britain would have joined Europe in austerity. So that's a big break. That's a change. I don't know why yet. I mean, you can't know everything. But there are things that are happening that are unusual. And so trying to say, will the BRIC nations cooperate with Europe and the United States generally? I don't know. It's up for grabs, just like until actually today, the Federal Reserve and what they were going to do about the American economy was up for grabs. And when the Senate wouldn't pass the extension yesterday of unemployment benefits, they knew they had to come in. And I just got that information this morning. It is not even public yet. And it has to be treated as rumor as well, because it's not official. But that's what they're going to have to do. And Europe's not going to do it. If you notice last week, the Federal Reserve, Mr. Bernanke, said, our economy, our recovery is not doing what it should do. And the blame lies with Europe in their austerity program. Well, give me a break. They didn't start austerity until 3 or 4 months ago. It's not Europe's fault. It's the failure of the program, which they used earlier in the 1930s under FDR. They created 45% of GDP was debt, and it was a failure. The only way they got out of the Depression was to have another war, which I'm expecting shortly in the Middle East.
That's exactly what I was going to touch on next, because that is another huge X factor to all of this that could be a game changer and could completely change what's going on overnight. And I don't think there's any way in which a war could play out to the benefit of any of the average citizens out there, although of course it's always good for the bankers and industry. But tell us your take on the situation right now, especially in the Middle East with Iran, but also in other flashpoints and where you think some troubles might pop up.
Well, the U.S. and Israel are certainly making every effort necessary to almost totally surround Iran with great military power. And so, gee, if I had to guess, I'd say maybe this summer they're going to give Iran an ultimatum. Either do what we want you to do, or we're going to make your country into a parking lot. And I believe that the Iran will say no, and the war will begin. And Russia and China both have treaties with Iran. Whether they honor them or not, it remains to be seen. But I quite frankly think Russia will. And that puts Russia and Iran against Israel and the U.S. And, of course, others will be sucked in. And I notice in the last several months that Turkey has pulled away with their relationship with Israel. And Israel, the Mossad, this past 2 weeks ago, tried to murder the PM of Turkey. And that's incidentally in the Israeli newspapers. You don't get it in America, but anyway, it's a fact. And they weren't successful. And that's good. And so Turkey is now part of the Eastern group, so to speak, a non-sectarian country that's very Muslim. And I think that that's going to be very complicating for NATO, for the U.S. and Israel, because Turkey is a very powerful force, and you do not want to go hand-to-hand with those people. I mean, they are ferocious fighters, and we found that out in Korea. They used to put the U.S. troops in the middle, and they flank them with Australians and Turks. And the Americans used to get upset because every time the Chinese and the North Koreans charged, the Turks would put on their bayonets and go out after them. And the Americans and the Aussies really didn't like that, but the Aussies went out where most of the Americans didn't. And so that's a history, a recent history, of their attitude towards warfare. So any kind of a conflict in the Middle East is going to last for a long time. And it'll be a diversion, and it'll get rid of a lot of people, which the Illuminati wants to do. You know, every 100 to 200 million they can get rid of, they're very happy about. And they'll probably try to extend the war throughout the world so they can get a lot of people killed. And that's one of the reasons why they have wars like that. And that's one of the reasons you never see them step in and stop some of the genocidal practices in places like Zimbabwe. They want them to all kill each other. That's why they don't step in anymore.
Well, exactly. It's going to be a horrific situation if and when that really does develop, especially as I agree, I think Russia probably will come to Iran's aid, and that will really kick off the next world war. I just can't envision how that would turn out in any way positive for anyone on the planet, but it certainly does seem to be shaping up that way. And I must admit, I do scan the Israeli papers, but I had not seen that story at all about the Mossad and the Turkish PM. Is there any other details you can add to that?
Oh, I had one this morning, but I picked it up yesterday. And the name of the newspaper is in Hebrew, so I don't even know what it's called. But it's from Israel. You'll see it in tomorrow's international forecast, it goes, we have the link in there. But I did receive more than one link. And so there is more than one report on it. But if I come across it again, which I probably will, I'll email it to you.
Excellent. Well, I'll certainly pass that on to the listeners. That's very interesting. And certainly we have seen so much information of a very worrying trend coming out of that region lately, with Saudi Arabia recently granting Israel flyover rights in case they do decide to airstrike Iran. And we've seen Israel launching new spy satellites aimed at Iran. And we've seen just so much happening in that arena that it really does seem that they are shaping up for something. But then again, we've seen this type of buildup of war rhetoric before, especially in the summer of 2007. It certainly seemed the Iran war was a definite possibility, and that subsided somewhat after it was exposed that Cheney had come up with the idea of painting up boats as Iranians and firing on American ships in order to launch a greater strike against Iran. And of course, that was exposed by Seymour Hersh. And after that, it seemed to subside, and Obama came in, and now it's shaping up again. Do you think this is just another round of war rhetoric that's just meant to puff the chest out and make it look like we have a commander-in-chief? Or is this of a different kind than what we've seen before?
Well, I think it's a different kind, and I don't think it is being played up, and it's not being propagandized. They're not talking much about all the movement of ships and everything. The Egyptians opened up the Suez for them as well, which has not been reported, which rather surprised me. But they're very duplicitous diplomatically. And so they're not making a big thing of it, so I think it's a real thing. I think you're going to wake up one morning and find out that the raids are on, and you're going to find out that Tel Aviv and Jerusalem no longer exist, and probably Saudi Arabia as well. The Iranians are going to get their piece of meat in this thing. And, of course, the U.S. doesn't care because they're not bombing New York City. But Israel and places in the Middle East are going to pay a terrible price, as are the Iranians.
As are many American forces who are right in striking range of the Iranians as well, sitting right there on, you know, just across the border.
Yeah, we talk about that on Drew Raines' program, which is sent out to active and retired military personnel. And I've done that program for 5 years, and you know, I'm quite plaintive with these people, saying, look, you know, this is what these people got planned, and why are you there? We've had about 15 people either write or call and tell us that they're tired of guarding poppy fields. I mean, this is real. I mean, these are people on the scene. And then last week, since the turn of the century, and that's the year 1900, so that's 110 years ago, it's been common knowledge that Afghanistan has lots of natural resources. I wrote an article 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and 7 years ago about the subject. Nobody cared. Nobody paid any attention. So why did the U.S. government come out and say that last week? They did it because they want to enunciate the fact that Afghanistan has gold. They didn't say how much. They just said the whole thing was worth $10 trillion or $1 trillion, whatever it was, because they wanted to knock gold down. They wanted people to think that, oh, Afghanistan's just one big gold mine, and they're going to mine it all, and the price of gold is going to go down. Well, most people don't think beyond the end of their nose, so they wouldn't think about that, the distortion, the propaganda. This is the kind of thing that you have to put up with, and you have to be very, very cautious when you read and see things, because it isn't always the way it seems to be.
In fact, it usually isn't, and you bring up such a good point there when you point out that the build-up to war with Iran this time is taking place in such secrecy and not being reported and not being trumpeted up and not having much fanfare behind it, that it really does seem that it could be serious, as opposed to if they were really trumpeting it up and playing it on 24/7 news cycle, then we probably wouldn't have so much to worry about, because it is certainly the case that it's almost always the obverse of what they're reporting is what's really happening. So the fact that this is so quiet is one of the worrying signs about it. So absolutely, people have to keep their eye on that. But we have had such a mass of really disheartening news tonight. Is there anything you can leave us with on a positive note?
I think the exposure of what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico is going to cause a curtailment of the seepage of oil, which they can stop anytime they want, at least as far as I'm concerned. I believe it's a false flag operation, and I won't go into all the details, but I think that they'll have to shut that down. And the main reason they did it was they want carbon taxes so they can double the price of electricity and gasoline, putting people further into poverty, at the same time draining off huge amounts of money so they can do what they want to do in making the federal government bigger and also funding the UN and the IMF and so on. Now, that's really the basic thing that that's all about. And, of course, they want to get rid of people, and so they'll probably start spraying along the coast there in the Gulf and get rid of 5 or 10 million people over the next 5 years.
Well, that's an extremely disturbing thought, but certainly there are a lot of reports coming out now about gases and other things emanating from the area that are potentially having huge health effects that are being completely unreported. And we've seen BP saying that anyone who's any of the volunteer cleanup workers who are wearing respirators will be removed from the scene and things like that. So absolutely anything's possible, but you think it's a positive sign that this is being exposed?
Well, I think it's normal that it would be exposed, because it is true to an extent, but I don't think it's the great crisis that we're led to believe that it is. The longer they can keep this thing going, the better, because they want to get these legislations passed. But so far, it's gone nowhere. And now we have a video which Alex Jones came out with early this week, which explains the coincidences that led up to this event. And I came up to the same conclusion he did, and I didn't talk to him about it. And you've got Goldman Sachs selling more than 44% of their holdings in BP, and they probably froze the rest of their position by shorting against the box or using derivatives. The CEO of BP sold one-third of his. He probably did the same thing. The organization that has the assets of the president, which is Vanguard, they sold their positions out. So they obviously were told what was going down with BP several weeks before it happened. Then you have Halliburton taking over the salvage company, the company that fixes things when things go wrong in the Gulf. I mean, why would they go and pay $8 or $9 billion in cash to do that? They knew something was going down. And there's a whole bunch more factors that tell me that this is a false flag operation. And I said it was from the very beginning. I just didn't have the facts. But it was atypical of something to do. Who owns BP? The Queen of England, the Queen of the Netherlands, and the Rothschilds. And what do they do? To the top people in the Illuminati. I mean, they don't mind sacrificing maybe 50 or 100 billion in order to get trillions of dollars in carbon taxes. Great exchange.
Especially as the idea of man-made global warming is completely and utterly collapsing, and the idea that it could ever be used to pass legislation in the United States now seems like something of a dream. Absolutely, along comes at this time just the perfect disaster for them to use to try to prop up that legislation again. So, yeah, absolutely, so many signs. But it's almost a question of how could they have? I mean, why would they do it so obviously? Why sell 44% of your stocks a week or two before it happens? I mean, it's so obvious, it's almost ridiculous.
They never thought you'd find out. That's why, and we did find out. because we're as smart as they are. And they don't like that one bit. Now, they tolerate people like you and I. But there'll come a time when they won't tolerate us anymore, when things get so bad for them, they have to shut us up. And that time will come. So get ready for it. We've discussed it before. I've talked to Alex about it for 10 years. And he's going to stand in there. Well, I'm 75 years old. I can't go 40 miles with a pack anymore. That's in one day, incidentally. And I was not in the Roman legions.
Well, that's epic in itself. Absolutely. Well, we have to just tell it like it is and, you know, let the chips fall where they may, because it's what we're here to do. And certainly the elite do seem to have a certain inbbuilt arrogance about them, with Alan Dulles saying that Americans don't read, so it's okay to put anything in the Warren Commission transcripts because no one will actually read it.
And we're changing that, Jim.
Exactly.
We're changing that. They don't have to read. All they have to do is listen. We've done all the work for them. They have to believe what we're telling them is the truth. And when we know that we don't know for sure whether something's going to happen and that we're guessing, that's fair. At least they have an idea that something like that, whatever it may be, might happen, and they're on guard for it. It's just like preparing for the biggest modern depression in history. I mean, we spend all our time preparing people for that. And if they act accordingly, there's going to be a coterie of people, a cohort, if you may, of 10 to 15% of the world population who are going to be in a position to survive this and help other people. And that's what this is all about.
It certainly is. And on that note, I understand that you've recently revamped the International Forecaster website, and it looks better than ever. It's got an incredible amount of information on there. Why don't you tell people a little bit about that redesign and where they can find the new website?
Well, we have a new website, www.intforecaster.com, intforecaster.com. And to make things simple, if you want to email us, and we answer everybody, the email address is bob@intforecaster.com. And if you would like to get a free introductory copy, you just have to go there, of the International Forecast, which is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. The email copies go out on Wednesdays and Saturdays, are about 40 pages each. And we also have a hard copy for those people who are not on the internet. And we have a toll-free number, if I can find it here. And that toll-free number allows you to get an introductory copy, but also they have a special deal there on getting the International Forecaster for a year. And you should call there to find out what that is. It's 877-479-8178. 877-479-8178. And it's the best newsletter deal in history.
That's a pretty bold proclamation, but I'm sure that people will be phoning to find out more about it. Bob Chapman, it's always a pleasure to have you on, and I'm always looking forward to our conversation, so I'm now looking forward to next month's conversation. Bob Chapman, intforecaster.com, thank you so much for joining me again today.
You're welcome, and thank you all for listening.